Well, speaking of that, you say that one would assume that open-mindedness is a prerequisite of being a good researcher, and you say that's actually quite rare.
Yes, I think so, because people get vested in their own field, and then they become advocates for it, and they're very close to it. They want it to work. I mean, you probably need a certain degree of loyalty to your own specialty in order to be successful in that field. But you also need people in society who are not vested and who can stand back from the work and say, is this really something beneficial? Is this really something properly done or honestly done? And I think we've oftentimes fallen down as a society in terms of being able to double check the honesty or the accuracy of the results being reported.
You said one of the most diabolical things they did was insert things from Dr. Segura's, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing his name, into their report, their final report, which discredited Laetrile.
Absolutely. I mean, they flipped things around so that they accused him of using a method which he never used, which was eyeball examination alone. Two of the researchers whose work supposedly refuted Segura only used eyeball observations in their so-called negative studies. That was not a charge that should have been directed at Dr. Segura. It was a charge that needed to be directed at, if at anyone, at Dr. Stockard and Dr. Schmidt. But they had made negative statements about Laetrile testing. Segura had made positive statements that his results were turning out positive. So they made charges against him that were completely untenable, and also, ironically, that pertained to his critics. Sloan Kettering wanted to do a clinical trial in Mexico on pain relief and stopping spread of cancer. This is why they went down to Washington in 74 and 75 to plead with the powers that be to let them do the clinical trial they had already set up, and they got shot down. And to my mind, the real turning point in the whole struggle came mid-March of 1975, when the top leadership of Sloan Kettering went down to the National Cancer Institute and tried to discuss the future. And something happened at that meeting. The notes of the meeting, which I have gotten through Freedom of Information Act, they seem to show just sort of this nice concord of agreement about moving forward. But something terrible happened.
One reporter talked about Sloan Kettering as this rich institution getting richer, but that it wasn't happy. And so I'm wondering, are you suggesting that Sloan Kettering, while they initially had high hopes for Laetrile, were pressured into abandoning it?
Oh, yes.
And to standing tall, saying it's useless.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I tried to talk to all the top leaders, and as a 32-year-old science writer, amazingly, I had access to Lloyd Old and Bob Good, both of whom had befriended me. But and I did try to talk to all of them. But the most telling comment came from Lewis Thomas, who was then the president or chancellor of the overall institution. He wouldn't talk to me, but he talked to my boss, who then reported back to me that Thomas's comment was, I'm not going to die on the barricades for Laetrile. It's only a palliative drug. If it was a cure, it would be different. So this, I think, was how they justified to themselves their reversal, because it was a complete reversal. They went down to Washington all fired up to try to convince the NCI, the ACS, and the other powers that be to at least let them go forward with a clinical trial in Mexico that Sloan Kettering would supervise in conjunction with this Mexico City hospital. And instead, 2 weeks later, or a week and a half later, the same Lewis Thomas suddenly started making these outrageously negative statements. We're basically denying
it had any value at all.
Correct. Not only that it had any value, because that's a quote-unquote value judgment, but saying we never got any positive results. I mean, I almost fell off my chair when I read this. I can still remember the moment sitting in my office. We had a clipping service, and we'd get all the quotes from around the country. And I'm looking at this. I mean, this negated all of Segura's experiments.
We should say that at the same time, you had started an underground newsletter within Sloan Kettering called Second Opinion.
That's right.
And in it, you were leaking some of this information about what was really happening in terms of researching Laetrile.
Right. Well, that actually didn't start till January of 76. The thing that really kind of flipped me was Chester Stock was quoted in Medical World News in the middle of 1975 as saying, "We have found laetrile negative in all the animal systems we have tested." So Segura and Sloan Kettering had tested in so-called CD8F1 mice.
These are mice that were specifically bred for cancer research.
Correct. And they developed breast cancer, and then the breast cancer simultaneously spread to the lungs. So Segura had had six positive experiments in CD8F1 mice. He had also had positive experiments in AKR leukemia mice. He had also had positive experiments in Swiss albino mice. Somebody in Elizabeth Stockert's lab had had positive experiments in Swiss albino, and Schmidt, who happened to be Segura's son-in-law, jointly had positive results in CD8F1 mice. So we're talking about something like 9 or 10 positive experiments overall, and how that translates into
no positive results.
And then they would, you know, riff on this, like not one iota, you know, one scintilla of positive results. So it's like each was sort of daring and emboldening the next one to make even more outrageously negative statements, which were in line with the negative statements that had been made before Segura had ever begun his work.
Although it sounds like Dr. Lloyd Auld didn't do this.
No.
He remained quiet.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, for better or worse, you know, he went away. He vanished the day of the press conference. I actually think that his office let out that he had gone to Tahiti, if I remember correctly. But whether it was Tahiti or the south of France, it doesn't make any difference.
He couldn't say this out loud is what you're suspecting.
He couldn't say it out loud. And when I interviewed him, he said to me, "Do you want to know where we get all of our new ideas?" And, of course, I did. And he sort of tiptoed around me and took down this volume, which was the American Cancer Society quack list, Unproven Methods of Cancer Management. He said, "Here, this is our Bible." And, you know,
in other words, he goes to that to decide what to investigate.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Which was contrary to what everyone else was doing.
It was the exact opposite of what everybody else was doing. And it goes against common sense because, after all, ACS was releasing this.
The American Cancer Society.
Right, American Cancer. I was releasing this book in order to warn people away from worthless and dangerous treatments. So this was a total revelation for me.
There are some who say more people make money from cancer than die from it.
Well, that's probably true, but there's nothing wrong with that if you're on the right track. We would want 10 times as many people involved in cancer research if we're making progress and if we're on the right track.
You wrote this book almost 40 years after coming out, basically leaking this information about what was going on in Sloan Kettering. And I wonder what your motivation was.
Well, Eric Merola,
the filmmaker had
approached me about doing a film about laetrile and some other things 6 years ago. And I turned him down at that time because I felt it was like ancient history. But then a couple of things happened. One is he's very persistent and very persuasive. And the other thing is that I became acquainted with the work of a scientist in Barcelona, Spain, who took the cyanide out of the laetrile and still got positive results with them. In fact, he showed that this non-cyanide laetrile were very, very powerful anti-inflammatory agents. So this showed me that there was another mechanism possible for laetrile that we hadn't considered. And it also, using those agents, would bypass the problem of the cyanide toxicity of laetrile, which isn't great, but it's a possibility.
My understanding is that as an injection, that the cyanide isn't so much a problem, but there are those who go to a health food store and buy apricot kernels.
Correct.
And ingesting them does release cyanide.
It absolutely does. And the body has some natural mechanisms to prevent cyanide poisoning, but they break down after a while. So people could kill themselves by taking a bag of apricot kernels. I've never been comfortable in advocating people taking apricot kernels because there's always that one person out there who doesn't get the instructions right. Maybe their brains are not functioning so well that day. And I don't want to be responsible for them dying or making themselves sick. So it's something to consider about laetrile. But by injection, both logically and also in terms of what we know about the clinical results, nobody ever died from an injection of laetrile, certainly not from any that was properly prepared. And it's not among, you know, doesn't have the same toxicity that standard treatment has.
How does Sloan Kettering feel about this book and this documentary?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't heard from them. I've had my ups and downs with Sloan Kettering over the years. I mean, I had, in 1999, I was invited back to give a Grand Rounds lecture.
And told not to mention Laetrile.
And told not to mention Laetrile. But all the same, you know, there have been times when my relationships with top people there have been quite warm. And we get referrals to our consulting service from some people at Sloan. Lloyd Old used to send patients to us, and other people who I won't mention, but very highly placed people also send.
You're referring to the Moss report, which
right.
is detailed reports on 22 of the most common cancers.
Correct. And I do phone consultations for patients as well. And, you know, so I have warm relations and have had warm relations with some people there. But they need to reconsider this. I mean, everybody needs to reconsider this, but they in particular, because I have a feeling that in some ways, you know, they're wedded to a lie that was created when some of the people we're dealing with there weren't even born or certainly weren't cognizant of this. You know, they've inherited a certain posture, a certain position about Laetrile, and it's hard. I mean, there are...
It sounds like you want them to clear their institutional conscience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think they should. I mean, GM seems to be in the process of doing that now around their recalls and all that. So we need a sort of a recall at Sloan Kettering where they own up to what actually happened, which is painful for them.
Because I actually called them and asked them for a response about your book and about this documentary.
Yeah.
They asked me to put it in writing and said they would get back to me and have not.
Well, when the film has its theatrical release in theaters, they're probably going to have to take more cognizance of it. And I can't give any details on that, but I can assure you that will happen. The film is not going to just linger in, you know, sort of the netherworld. It will get attention.